podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to a bumper preview podcast of the 2024 Guinness Women's Six Nations Championship here on the KLNS Rugby Podcast. Joining me tonight, we have a brilliant panel of experts, and two of them are coming back to us. And from an Irish perspective, we have the brilliant returnees of Aoife O'Callaghan and Chrissy Hawkins. So welcome back to you, first of all.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you very much for having us back. It's like deja vu.
It really is, because, you know, for the two of us, it's been like a week or 2 weeks or whatever since we last recorded. But for everyone else, it's 2 and 3 days to have Aoife back on. So definitely a sense of deja vu. But we always like to get fresh perspectives onto the podcast. And we have a brilliant debutante join us tonight. You may recognize her muses from Twitter in the form of Missile Panda. So joining us is Edinburgh and Scotland fan Leslie. Leslie, it is great to have you on. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks very much for having me. It's lovely to speak to you in person, sort of.
Of course. I haven't heard that yet before on all the introductions. That's always nice to hear as well. But we'll start with Ireland, because that's who most people tune in will want to talk about or listen to. And I suppose last year, there's no other way of putting it, Ireland took the wooden spoon, sixth spot, only 3 tries scored in the entire championship. First time in 20 years that they finished that low. And there is room for optimism with WXV3 glory under the stewardship of new head coach Scott Beamont. We will mention the WXV in quite detail throughout the tournament. So in case anyone is confused, that's the tournament that ran off last October, November in various parts of the world and was basically a Nations League type competition for the various countries. Just in case you get a little bit confused, important to get that in there. Aoife, I'll start things off with yourself, because, you know, we spoke about this with Maeve Dealey last night on that interview about Scott Beamon, but he's certainly, in first impression, seemed decent. He's got a lot of experience, but he's rebuilding and thankfully got the WXV 3 minutes under his belt, first of all. So that's always a good start. But just, we'll start with the Ireland squad. What do you make of it? Quite a bit of controversy and question marks about it, but given the contracting, kind of to be expected. So what do you make of the squad, first of all?
So I was lucky enough to be there at the, well, virtually, technically, Scott Beamon's first press conference. And I think from the get-go, just how he spoke about the team, how he spoke about how, the kind of nature and the vibes he kind of wants to bring into the whole thing, it was all really, really positive. And I think that kind of shone a bit of light on me that he could be onto something, you know. And I think that having the WXV and the Celtic Challenge as well, I think as much as we could give out about how long the Celtic Challenge was and how it affected the AIL and whatnot, I think it was a really good opportunity to allow players such as, like, you know, your Ruth Campbell, you know, your Sarah Delaney, to kind of, anyone who's been flourishing in AIL and maybe like on the fringes of interpros, or, you know, like that has flourished in interpros, it's been an opportunity for them to get more professional minutes kind of under their belt. So I think, like, I could sing as many songs as I wanted to about Ruth Campbell. I thought she was absolutely phenomenal in the Celtic Challenge, same in the interpros. So I think finally seeing her make a squad, I think, is really, really deserved. You know, it's the same with, like, you look at Sarah Delaney, you know, how well she played on WXV. I think WXV was also a really good opportunity to bring back, you know, players who haven't been there, like, in a while. Like, you look at Nicola Foley, like, she kind of came off of was an injury she ended up coming on for, and then she ended up playing out the entire tournament in the end.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, and they brought her back into the race, so obviously she's clicked really, really well with the team itself, you know. So I think it's a really nice mix. So there's a really nice mix of experience and youth. So, like, you still have, you know, your likes of Linda, your likes of, you know, Dorothy Wall, Natasha Behan, people who've been there for a good while that know the structures and can bring in these young ones and kind of help them along into, this is how you play professional rugby and this is what things are like. But at the same time, it's bringing in that youthful aspect of, like, you look at, like, Chisholm now, who's made the team, like, she's a baller. Like, seeing her play with UL this year, she's been unbelievable. So, so good to see her get an opportunity. You know, and then obviously we've got Enya Breen back as well, which I think will bring another element of experience into it. I do think we'll probably miss Derville a little bit. I think, you know, like, she's just, I said it in a previous podcast already, I just think she's such an all-rounder. Like, there's nothing she's bad at. Do you know what I mean? So I think she could be a little bit of a missing link. But I feel like this squad, there's, like, a lot more cohesion into it and kind of, it's weird to say more of an effort. Like, we as a media squad kind of got sent a media packet recently, which I've never been sent. Like, I've been on the IRFU media list now, I think 2 or 3 years, so I've never been sent anything like this. So I think since Aoife Clark has stepped into kind of head of communications, and now they have their own communications officer in Lisa Doyle, I think they're really starting to put the effort in there. Like, we got to learn all about who the players were. They gave you the lyrics, for anyone who didn't know the lyrics to the national anthems. Do you know, there's a really big emphasis being put into them, which I think is needed. And I think that's a boost for them in itself as well. So I think everyone's kind of starting to rally behind them. So hopefully they can have a good tournament. You know, it's we could sing so many songs and say so many good things about who's who, but as long as they have a good tournament, I think is the most important thing.
Start with the optimism anyway, because there's going to be plenty of optimism about, say, England's chances or France's chances or Wales or Scotland later. So maybe that was actually the better note to start off on. But I was going to touch on the kind of the keeping the good vibe going, Chrissy, because like they won the WXV3 last year. That they obviously they didn't know at the time, but they do know now that they'll be in WXV2 next year, which will be more competitive for them. And like just to have the opportunity to dust off. To bookend last year with some big results and some important results, and to have that bit of silverware must be absolutely huge from a mindset point of view to have that coming into the Six Nations.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, because I remember actually watching the commentary after the last game against Scotland last year. It was Scotland or England, but they were just like, the girls are all just devastated just at the lack of, you know, interest that has been in, like, the IRFU are not investing in the girls. And they were like, after all the work, and you could just see just the heartbreak in it. So I just thought that competition to go into that. And then, yeah, maybe they were miles ahead of two of the teams they were in, but it made, like, even just having that chance to come up against these and get these wins and get a bit of momentum under your belt, you'll feel a lot more confident coming into this tournament instead of, like, going through another tournament where you're just lost all the time, you know?
No, absolutely. And it's that feeling of not feeling lost or not feeling defeated straight out the gate. It's very important. Now, I understand they travel to Le Mans to play a very strong France side. But at the same time, when they get to those home games, and there's an excitement of the fact that these home games are moving around. And I know Musgrave is a great place to play both their home games there last year. But like the fact that these games are moving around, like the fact that they have this win of momentum, the fact that Scott Beaman was involved in the Celtic Challenge teams in the background, it just feels so much fresher. And maybe it's a bit of hopium, but it does feel fresher. And I'll get into Celtic Challenge because Leslie, I know you followed it with great detail. I know Glasgow and Edinburgh, they were newly formed. We might get into that a little bit later on. But from watching, you know, the Wolfhounds in their victory and the Clovers who finished, I think was third in the end. Was there anyone in particular who stood out to you, or were you impressed by the Irish sides in it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Wolfhounds, I think, went pretty much unbeaten, didn't they? Or only lost maybe one game.
One
But yeah, they were
draw
great.
or one loss, one or the
Yeah.
other, yeah.
I thought Ruth Campbell from Clovers was really good. I didn't watch all of the Irish games, but I saw most of them. She was, like, great in the line out. She was just everywhere. I think she even found herself out in the wing for a try. She was great. I really liked her. Really busy. Aoife Wafer from Wolfhounds. So she plays seven. I thought she was really physical, great ball carrier, had some wheels, you know, pretty speedy for a seven. I thought she was great. Kayla Waldron from the Clovers was my sort of, she was 12, I think. Was just involved in everything, you know. She was just, you're watching on commentary and it's like, Kayla Waldron all the time, just, you know, great. Some really lovely passing from her too. So they were probably the three that I, from watching the games that I did see, were my standout from those two teams, from the Irish teams.
And hopefully they can build on that confidence, as we said, and the fact that they if it did touch on it, and you're right to touch on it, they're not AIL games and they're not the local games that we'd like to see them playing, but they are minutes of some sort, and maybe, you know, I know it wasn't exactly fully strength Scotland or Welsh sides, but maybe there is just that sense of belief because, you know, everyone's brain works differently coming into these things, and you do hope that's the case. And if I'm conscious of not getting into like selections and things like that, because we record on Tuesday night, the first squad will be named on Thursday, the day this goes out. So a lot of what we say could be ended up being reductive. So I just wanted to focus on the bigger picture. Like, it feels like there will be some pressure because they are talking about, you know, World Cup qualification. Maeve mentioned it on yesterday's podcast. I know Dorothy Wall and Scott Beaman mentioned it this week to the press. So that's a big factor. It's Olympics year, so they're going to get compared to the sevens team, whether we like it or not. And I know we mentioned we don't like seeing that, but hopefully it's not as cutting. And hopefully there will be that freshness that we've spoken about. What do you think should be our expectations, or what are your expectations for this Irish side? Because there is, on one hand, it can't get any worse. There's the other viewpoint that many people will share, that what have the RFU done to make the top team better, apart from changing the coach? And that's a very fair perspective as well.
Yeah, I think for it to reflect well on the IRFU, they need to be competitive. You know, they don't have to be winning games, but they need to be up there. Like, you're looking at the scores last year, like there were teams running away with it, you know, and like, it's so hard to come off the back of those games and then set yourselves to feel like you're going back into another failure, to then have the media down your back, you know, and giving out and saying, like, should Ireland even be, like, in the Six Nations and all that? And, you know, is it time for them, like, some journalist wrote, is it just time for them to not show up for games or something once or twice? And I just think that was so reductive. And I know, like, I was part of the media in that sense, and I was covering it for one of the radio shows down here and stuff. So I got to witness it firsthand and witness these questions being asked. But, like, I think they also need to get their respect back. I think they need to get out there and show, like, you saw it with WXV, you saw it with Celtic Challenge, you know, we do have a really good pool of talent, you know, and we haven't had to go looking elsewhere. We haven't had to go looking for our Irish qualified players. You know, I know we do have an NIQ system kind of mostly based in the UK. And like, there has been a couple who've gone over, like, I know Lucia Lynn, who would have played underage at me and Dolphin down here, she's gone over to play with Loughborough at the moment, and she's Irish qualified, and she's been in and out of underage squads and stuff like that. So I think we really just need to show that we do have a pool of players that are competitive, that are talented, that are deserving to be in the World Cup. But I think just not allow themselves to be written off straight off the bat. I know Scott Beaman and Adele McMahon were interviewed earlier. They had a press conference, I think, earlier today. And it was on, I think it was Sinead Cassan's Twitter, I think I ended up seeing it. And they were like, look, we're not going into France scared. You know, we're going to still go in there and put up a good fight. We're not going in thinking, oh yeah, they're going to absolutely hammer us, you know. And I said, like, World Cup qualification is important. But I think just even for pure confidence, I just think they need to put on a performance that they're happy with. You know, I think the wins will come, but I think right now it's about building that fan base back up, putting their stamp on things and being like, we are here and we're not going anywhere. And I think that's kind of what is most important this year for them mentally, even as players.
I think, like, the France one is such a tricky one, insofar as you could look at it and say, well, France aren't the best team in the world. That's England, which is also unfortunate that we have to play them in Twickenham, but we get to that. But France have put up like 100 points on Ireland over the last three games, which mightn't seem like a lot in competitive games, but none of them were overly competitive. So there's that side of things. But at the same time, what prism do we look at this team through? Well, they came sixth last year. So if they go and have a cut off France and prove themselves that they have improved in some metrics, it could be set piece, defence, attack, whatever it might be, then that's something. And I don't want to say we compare this team to Italy, but like, if you compare it to, say, Italy of this year, and if that's the footing that we're looking at this team at, then that would be phenomenal. And if they played the same rugby that Italy played in the men's championship this year, I would absolutely take it. But Chris, I might just throw that to you to finish the Ireland conversations for now, because obviously Aoife had first-hand experience of following the team last year, but for most of us, we didn't have that, and we were looking at these drubbings that were hard to watch. So where would your expectations be as a fan looking from that perspective?
If I'm honest, they're not hugely high, but I do want to see them do better. And like that, I think what you're saying with the set piece, or, you know, just seeing improvements, like that thing, like, we're not just not getting hammered by all the different teams. Because I remember watching the Welsh game last year, and I was just like, I had to give up, you know. You're kind of like, no, I left it on, I didn't turn it off. But you're just kind of like, you're just sitting there and you're going, oh, and it's not their fault. I'm not blaming them. Like, everyone, there's been more investment in all the other teams. So, like, I'd just love to see them you know, improving those little bits. Like, you know, if they do in Italy, like in the men's Six Nations, even better. But you know, really putting up a fight, I think, in some games would be really, really good to see.
Absolutely, and hopefully they do. And in some ways, it's ironic that we shift from Ireland to England now to the Red Roses, who are one of the most dominant rugby teams ever in any code, men's, women's, 15 sevens. It is phenomenal. And Leslie, I'll start with yourself because they're world number one. They're a consistent champion. And it feels so harsh to say it, but there's probably no scarier prospect in world rugby right now than this Red Roses team.
Yeah, it's certainly the Six Nations. I think I'd probably have New Zealand up there too, to be fair. They're just so far ahead of everybody else, aren't they? You know, they're years ahead of everybody. They've put the time, the money, the effort into it, which everyone else is playing catch up. I think probably from an Ireland and Scotland perspective, you would just sort of need to almost park England a little bit and kind of not worry about them. They'll probably win and that'll be fine. And it's the best of the rest, I think, that will be the real competition, if you like. They are great, but I'm sure there will be ways that teams can get at them. I watched back their World Cup final with New Zealand. And they do a lot of the sort of same thing. So their roller maul was excellent, and that's what they go to a lot of the time. But there is opportunities out wide to get them. You know, they can be quite narrow in defence. So, you know, there should be opportunities for teams to try to at least get some tries on them. I'm not saying they'll win, but it would be nice if it could be a bit more competitive than it is or has been recently.
Oh, that's true. And to be fair, if there are nations who could have a cut at them attack wise, I think Ireland are well set in, depending on how they line up. Wales are definitely well set because they've probably won the best, well, sneaky great backline, to say the least. So it's interesting that way. But Chrissy, like they romped to WXV, won silverware last year. They've won Grand Slams in the last four tournaments. If they are going to be stopped, do you think there's any overarching flaw that you can see, or do you think there's anything in particular that it will take to stop them? Even something like having one eye on the World Cup next year, do you think that could be something that could potentially derail them?
No. short of them all going down with some stomach bug like the Scottish teams in South Africa last year, I find it hard to see them being stopped. If I'm honest, maybe France will have a go at them, but I just think they are just not too far ahead at the moment. And the RFU did it right. Like when it came to the women's rugby, they invested in it and they've developed one of the strongest teams in the world. And you know, they've really shown how it should be done. They're deservedly that good, you know.
It's ironic too because there's almost a juxtaposition of who does men's rugby the best. Ireland, probably France, South Africa. Who does women's rugby the best? It's England. Systematically, it's probably Wales. Scotland have had a kick up the arse and started to kick on. New Zealand potentially, but then they're always going to be somewhat dominant. So there's almost this juxtaposition of as to what you do well on one side and the other side. And to be fair to the RFU even, they have really cemented it. The Premiership is an incredible product. It's there, it's live on TNT the whole time. They've got a streaming platform that you can watch it. And because of that, the squad has been littered with talent. And Aoife, I'll get onto you on this one because you've seen them in the flesh last year. You've obviously kept an eye on them. Is there anyone in particular we should keep an eye on, be it the older heads or the new faces, or who should we be, again, to use that word, who should we be scared of, I think?
For me, I really enjoyed watching Abby Dow and Ellie Kildon last year. You know, I just think they were two fantastic backs. They're just athletes. Like they could just run and run and run all day and just not look tired, you know. I think fear-wise, again, like look at England's forward pack. Like they're just I was watching clips back before I came on here and they were just dominating everyone in mauls, in scrums, everything, you know, like even you look at like Randy Packer and stuff like that, and how she was just breaking off the back of walls and smashing through like no fear of her, you know. So again, I think they're going to be really, really strong there. And then I'm just really interested to see how Emily Scarrett gets on now that she's back. You know, I'm a big fan of the Good Scars and the Rugby Pod, so it's good to see her come back. You know, hopefully we see, I think, Mo Hunt get a couple more minutes. You know, I think she kind of rode the bench a little bit last year, but I thought she was really good in the their Prem final for Gloucester. You know, I just think she's a really good commanding presence off the back of that ruck as a nine. So I hope she maybe will get like a couple more minutes. But I think standout has to be Abigail and Ellie Kildon. Like, I just think they get that ball and they're gone. Do you know what I mean? And that's so entertaining to watch at the same time. As much as, like, you know, they could be so far ahead, you know, they just have such the fancy footwork, the interest of getting that ball and just running, and they're just so much fun to watch.
And it is kind of ironic too how this England side, who will, for the most part, they'll beat most teams because of their power and their S&C and their physicality, and that's hugely important. But they do have the likes of Abby Dow, who has scored 100-meter tries multiple times in her career. Not just once or twice, but like multiple times in her career, which really says something. But one thing I really wanted to touch on as well is the fact that England will play a home game in Bristol, which holds about 30,000, give or take. It's a Premier League standard stadium if they ever go up. They'll also play a game in Twickenham, which is massive. And Chrissy, I'll come to you because we mentioned the World Cup, which will take place in England next year. To have these games, it is against Ireland. Granted, it's probably not the biggest game in terms of competitiveness, but in terms of the market, it is probably the biggest game for Twickenham to host. To have these whole high-profile games in large stadiums, it's brilliant for the game, it's brilliant for the championship, and it's brilliant for English rugby, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, maybe Ireland aren't the best team in the championship, but having Ireland play them in Twickenham, like, how many Irish people will go to see that just because Ireland are playing? You know, they'll sell a lot of tickets, and again, it'll get more people watching the game. And it's just, I think it's really important that the women's game is now getting the proper stadium. Like, not that like Bristol isn't good enough or anything, but the fact that like they're holding games in Twickenham, and they've sold out games in Twickenham, haven't they? Did they sell out last year?
Sold out. I think they went to try and sell like 60,000 tickets, and they sold 60,000 or something like that, or 70 of the 80.
Yeah, which like is massive, like for women's sports in general, and it can only grow from there, you know, which I think is really, really important. And especially with the World Cup, as you're saying, like next year, it's going to be in there. People are going to, if they're paying attention now, they're likely to go that next year, you know.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, it gets more eyeballs on the sport and on the competitions. And I recognise maybe EFL preferred to play in Musgrave Park, but there is something about taking on the lore of it and this fabled nature of it that is incredible. And I do think we're going to see an unbelievable World Cup there in England next year. Hopefully it's a little bit more competitive, like the last one was really competitive, especially in the last four. But I do think in terms of, you know, strike while the iron is hot, England is the ideal venue to be going to next. And if they are going to be challenged, however unlikely, however much of an outside bet it might be, it'll probably be France. If I'll start with yourself, because typically they've been the best of the rest, but like WXV1, it was pretty disappointing. They came fifth, which is definitely worse than where they'd have liked it. Granted, there was 2-1 score defeats in there. How do you see them going this time around? And, you know, we'll touch on them playing Ireland in a minute, but just for the rest of the championship, how do you see them going?
Do you know, I think, like, it sounds awful. I know it was WXV's first year and everything like that. And look, it was great for us, and it's great for teams, you know, like Ireland, like Spain and stuff like that, to get like wins under their belts going forward and the rest of their seasons and stuff. But like for the likes of France, I think WXV was a tough one because they only had to play 3 games. Do you know, like it was a weird kind of layout for those first tier teams because they weren't playing each other. Like France played Australia, Canada, and then they were beaten by England by a point, I think, in the end or something. So like, how's that kind of relevant coming into the Six Nations if they only ended up playing one of the nations that are in the Six Nations? Do you know that type of way, you know? So
and one of the two that was in that pool, because themselves, England and Wales, were all in it.
Yeah, I did think, I just thought it was weirdly split up and kind of like it didn't really, nothing didn't really stand to them. It was game time and whatnot and time for them to be together and play together and everything like that. But it's a weird thing for, I think, the tier one nations to kind of rely on a little bit, if that makes sense. But then I suppose if you look at last year's Six Nations, you know, most teams they beat between 20 and 50 points. Do you know, like it, there was massive margins in those games, and then there was only 5 points between them and England. So I think if they are going to be the team to challenge England, like I think it's going to be like Le Crunch or whatever they like to call it or whatever, you know. So I think they are going to be the one people, one team's challenge. But at the same time, then you look at their team, they're like, a lot of it is the same compared to, I think, last year's Six Nations from what I could tell. I think there is a good couple of new kind of newbies kind of coming in, and there's been some small changes. But again, like looking at how they played in the WXV, you know, I think their backline looked really good, really strong. Again, they had those like break off the wings and stuff like that. So they'd probably be a good match for the likes of Abby Dow and Ellie, you know, and stuff. So yeah, I think they're going to be the only team kind of to properly challenge them at the very top. I think it's between them and the top two, really, you know.
That's it. And funnily enough, like they are without probably their biggest high profile star, which feels incredibly familiar for French fans because unlike Antoine Dupont, who went off to sevens, Jesse Tremoulier retired from the game last year. And like that's definitely going to be a factor because when you lose the best player, arguably one of the best players in the world, it's definitely going to be something. And Chrissy, I might just come to you next because Ireland do play them on Saturday. That game is live on RT2 on Saturday afternoon. It's a really interesting one because, as we said, France have had one-way traffic over Ireland in recent years, but probably won't be coming in with the most amount of confidence, whereas Ireland will. The fact it's in Le Mans shifts it back in France's favour. How do you see that one going? Do you think Ireland can slow them down this time? Think it'll be one-way traffic, like some of the. It probably is markedly stronger Ireland squad than what I played them last year, and arguably a slightly weaker France squad that played last year.
I suppose the thing you have there as well is if, you know, everyone's expecting France to win, if Ireland just has a go and goes for it, like, you know, you have a good chance of catching them. You know what I mean? Like, you know, how many times have you look at the England game, for instance, for us in the men's Six Nations, like, everyone's like, yeah, Ireland are going to walk over them. And look what happened. So there's not to say that they, like, they can't catch them on the hop, like, you know, and just maybe not win them. Or beat them, sorry. But give them a run for their money, you know, slow them down, like you said, and even get a few scores, hopefully, ideally.
Well, I'd definitely take a bonus point or two if it was on offer, but it
I
is.
take the win, you know, honestly, firstly, but
We take the win, absolutely. I mean, I take a grand slam if you're going to offer it here now, but you know, the one step at a time. You have to get in the game first. But it is interesting because that is kind of similar to what Skip Beamon said. They want to have a cut off them. They want to rattle France's cage and go from there. And I think there is a bit of self-reflection going on in this Ireland squad. They know they probably haven't been as good as they should have been in recent years, even if they probably weren't expected to win those games. But I think now there's a hunger. We're not going to die wondering this time. We're not going to roll over and concede maybe 15, 20 points in a 20-point period that completely ices the game out of our favour. And that's probably as important as that on this learning curve. And that's it's what we touched on with Aoife and Tom on Tuesday and with Maeve yesterday and tonight. It's a learning curve. It's a progression. The end goal is the World Cup in 2025 if they get there. And that's for Ireland, that's how we're looking at it. Granted, other teams have different ambitions. I'm sure Scotland will want to break into the top three ahead of Wales or France, and England will want to win another Grand Slam and keep the momentum going and different things. But it is, you know, for Ireland, it is about just keep moving on an upward trajectory, however slow, just keep moving on that upward trajectory. And if they can do it this weekend, I mean, it would be huge because I think the one beauty of it, I think if everything goes right, the one beauty of having it directly after the men's competition is you can keep the vibes going. The issue last year was that wasn't the case and it completely deflated it and it looked probably worse by contrast, which was unfortunate. But I know what everyone wants to get into is Scotland. Because we love punching down at Scotland, but that won't be the case tonight. Leslie, I'm going to hand you the floor basically on this one because delighted to have you on as our Scottish guest as always. But just to start things off, fourth last year, really impressive turnaround. Where do you think Scotland are heading into the 2024 championship?
So Scotland won WXV2, so I think we're now on like 5 or 6 winning streak, which is for the first time in so long for the Scottish ladies. We've got a pretty settled team. We've only brought in, I think, 7 uncapped players. 4 have come from Celtic Challenge, from the Edinburgh team, and there's a couple from who play in the Prem. So I think Scotland need to be pushing for 3 wins. Wales, Ireland and Italy. I think that would be a successful competition for Scotland. Whether that happens is obviously a different story. Wales are obviously really pretty strong, but it was really close last year in that game. I was there. I think there was only like 2 points in it at the end or something like that. I would like to see them get the win this year. I think that would be really a good, successful campaign going into WXV later on.
And it just speaks to the fruits of their labour, doesn't it? Because there's been a huge impetus on trying to turn things around. You know, I think they were 6th either in 21 or 22. I can't remember which it was. Don't have it in front of me. And they have. And like, granted, Glasgow weren't great in Celtic Challenge, but Edinburgh were really competitive. And unlike the Irish teams, and I mentioned this the other night, you know, way nicer jersey than what we were doing in as well. These things make a difference. But I want to speak on Celtic Challenge because that is the most recent guide we have. And for a lot of people listening, they would have watched it and they would have seen a couple of players. But for those who haven't, is there anyone standing out? You mentioned the uncapped quartet from Celtic Challenge. Is there any of them, or is there anyone else maybe playing abroad in the Premiership that we should be keeping an eye on from Scotland?
So for me, I think Kieran Bell, she's a winger, plays for Edinburgh. She's this year's Fran McGee, maybe. She was great on the wing. Pretty strong. Plays the same position, unfortunately, but, you know, injuries, that kind of thing, she could well get a chance. Meryn Gunderson, she plays number 8, also for Edinburgh. Really strong ball carrier, which I think Scotland have kind of been missing a little bit. I would like to see her get a little bit of game time, if possible. She does a lot of that kind of hard, grunt, unseen work. She would be up there, I think. They're probably my 2 biggest that I think that might get a chance of some game time. We did have Meg Varley from Bristol, but unfortunately she's out injured now, so she's not going to play any part in this competition, unfortunately. But she might have had a reasonable chance with playing Prem. Yeah, they're probably my 2 biggest players we're likely to see if they get a chance.
Well, hopefully. It's always good to see fresh blood woven in, even if some people are slightly against it. But it's funny because, like 2 years ago, Ireland finished with Scotland in Ravenhill. And I do understand Scotland would probably be thinking, we can finish 2nd or 3rd. We can really do this. On the flip side, Aoife, they have to go to Ravenhill, which isn't an easy place to go to. If Ireland have their tails up, like 2 years ago in particular, they'll probably be feeling like they could maybe stem the tide and claim a win in this one. I understand it was incredibly tight finish and extremely dramatic and enjoyable finish when they met last time around. But is this one of the games that Ireland are targeting? Yes, they're at home, but like Scotland, they're not exactly the consistent force of, say, France or England. Should they be targeting this one, do you think?
It's a tough one because part of me says yes. I think, you know, it comes down to how the rest of the tournament has gone for them. Do you know, if they end up in the same place where they were last year, where it's all doom and gloom for the media and, you know, vibes are crap and like everyone's upset and there's drama and it's not just about playing. It's like All he won last year was it just to be about the game, and it became so much more than that. It became nearly personal in some instances. So I think if this year it just comes back to just being about game rugby, the girls playing, you know, there's no outside drama affecting them mentally, you know, that they can go in their best mental state, in their best physical state, and just go in and play. I think they could put it up to them in that final game if it has gone well for them. But again, at the same time, like, I think Scotland and Wales, like, they've been tipping away quietly in the background, you know, under the shadow of England a little bit, you know. Like, you look at our neighbours next door and you think, oh my God, England, amazing, the Prem, amazing, everything. But, like, when you look at those Scotland side, same with the Wales side, probably, like, it's all Prem players anyway. So they're playing with all these English players. But I think because people are so fixated on England being big thing at the moment, you kind of forget about their two, you know, neighbors up top and down out east, you know. So it's like, yeah, I think they'll slowly be tipping. But I love for it to be a small margins game again. But as I said, it'll all come down to how we've gone in the tournament so far, if we've picked up any injuries, you know, if anyone's missing. So yeah, I think for us it's like, as much as we want it to be competitive, we want it to be great, I think it is an open tournament for us that, like, there are so many new faces and it's such a new setup that it go really well, but it could equally also go very badly at the same time. So we're hoping for the positive side, though. Fingers crossed.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the only downside to it is that game takes place. Do you have the date off the top of your head? I don't have it written down.
Oh, is
It's
it like,
April, isn't it? So yeah, it's
yeah,
definitely
I'm
April. And like the sevens side will have gone back into sevens camp by then because sevens is back on the 5th, which I looked up there. So that could be an element. Like, as mad and all as it seems, 2 years ago when Ireland played Scotland in Ravenhill, if they had their sevens players, they'd probably win that game 5 minutes earlier. It was just one of those weird anomalies. So these things are a factor as well. And if you want to hear more on talking about the sevens and all that, I do recommend Tuesday's podcast with Aoife and with Tom, where we talk about grassroots and sevens and international and the entire ecosystem of Irish women's rugby, because it's important to talk about it all. But for now, we will focus on Six Nations and try and stop going off on tangents this moment. Leslie, I'll just come to you on Wales because it's remarkable the uptick that they've had. Rock bottom in 2021, hammered by Ireland, hammered by everyone I know. You know, Scotland beat them by 15, 16 points when Scotland weren't at their highest at the time. Third place last year, third place the year before, and they're kind of coming in under the radar. Yeah, WXB wasn't great, but they've got France at home, and you really feel like they could take them, and they'll be targeting that French game and that Scotland game and hoping to jump up to second, surely.
Yeah, I had to, well, I was trying to look for the Welsh team earlier on in the week. You'll have seen my rant probably. And I could not find that team very easily on the official Six Nations website, which just annoyed me. Like, it's a week to go. Get it on the website. Make life easy for people.
Absolutely.
So I was, what I was really trying to find out was who was playing from what clubs? Because I didn't know enough about who played in the Prem and how their structure was. But I managed to find it eventually, and they've still got a really quite, I know they've had a couple of retirements from last year, but they've still got a really quite a strong core group of players. And WXU wasn't great, and I don't actually think they played all that great. Even if, you know, you lose, you can still have a reasonable game for yourself, but I think they'll be probably hurting a little bit from that and be looking to target this game, even if they might not win, and I'm not sure they will. I think France might just be that little bit too strong for them. They'll come out all guns blazing. I fully expect that from them. You know, they've got, you know, Alex Callender, Cecilia Tupolotu. You know, such a strong core of their team. I would really like it to be a close game. You know, I've no skin in the game. I don't mind who wins, but it would be great for it, for the competition, for it to be a close game.
I think that's where you and I differ there, Leslie, because I have a skin in every game. Like, I'm making my business to have a skin in every game. But it's good to have that neutral hat, as always. And I suppose, Chrissy, like, We talk about Wales. We talk about WXV because it's the most recent competition. Didn't go well for Wales. They finished rock bottom. Only France finished above them. And I know, as Aoife said, these sides didn't play each other. We don't know exactly where they are. But in some ways, where that may have been France's downfall, maybe that's a good thing for Wales, because they didn't play France. And maybe they'll be looking at that French game at home, coming off the back of a successful Celtic Challenge. But for some of their players in Celtic Challenge, it was decent. A lot of them playing Premiership Rugby, which is a higher calibre, I think, than the French Rugby. I think it's widely accepted. Maybe they'll be looking at that game thinking, yeah, we can take them. And then if they do manage to grab that second place spot in the competition, it'll be fully deserved. But they're probably eyeing it up and probably feel like they can do it.
Yeah, like, there's no reason why they shouldn't. I did watch them play Ireland last year in the Six Nations, and you could see the difference that the systems that have gone in there between ours and theirs. Like, and that was, like, you know, that's going to keep, like, ticking over, you know what I mean? It's only going to get better. So I don't see why they should think they shouldn't be able to beat France, you know?
And, like, Cardiff Arms Park is becoming a bit of a fortress for them. I'll insert the joke here because no one else will, but it's been more of a fortress for them than it has for the Cardiff Blues, to be honest, which is good to see for Welsh rugby. But listen, I think that's the fun side. I understand we can get caught up in the doom and gloom about Irish rugby, but for four of the teams, there's a very level playing field. And we'll get on to the last of them now, because Italy, they were fifth in last year's Six Nations, and you can take it as being probably just making up the numbers again, but they were second on WXV2 behind Scotland on points difference. Quite literally just a score in it. I can't remember if it was six or two. It was one or the other. It was definitely a score and the skin of the teeth. And, like, Aoife, I'll come to you because you would have seen them play Ireland. They played in Cork two years ago. Yep. You'd have seen them play. Do you think they're poised to possibly kick on? Because, like, yeah, fifth and sixth nations, not great, but they're literally right behind Scotland if you go by the most recent metric.
If you think about it, like, that, similar for the WXV for us and winning it in WXV3, I think that position for them was a confidence boost more than anything. Now, again, I'm still unclear on whether this WXV thing is worth what it is. It's great for confidence and all that jazz, but three matches, I just think, is a bit. But that's a whole other story. But I think for Italy now this year, it's going to be very much like a tick-the-box thing. Like, if they can beat Ireland, okay, right. Who do you move on to next? Okay, beat Scotland. Grand. Perfect. So it's going to be like a very much take each game as it comes for them. I think they can definitely, I'd say, put it up to Scotland. But I think it's very much going to be beat Ireland. Who's their next game? You know, kind of build slowly. Do you know, I don't think they want to come out of the blocks probably as fast, because that gives false hope and you don't want that really, as much as everyone would live off that. You know, I think you're better just to set small goals, and as you hit that each one, then fantastic. And look, if they don't, I think it's going to be interesting though at the same time. I think I could definitely hopefully kick on a step or two.
I do think we could see that as well. And just looking at their fixtures, I understand. There's only three games WXV, and yes, I can see why you'd be disappointed in it, but they hammered the hosts in South Africa, which is a pretty good achievement. You know, for Italian rugby to get that kind of a result is a pretty decent achievement for them, even if South Africa aren't as, you know, high flying as they are in the men's game. But to beat the hosts, and again, confidence is going to be so big, because women's rugby is not used to having, say, November internationals, maybe one. Maybe even two. I think England, New Zealand played a two test series in November a couple of years back. One or two games. But to have these block of fixtures where there's a table and there's a prize, it's going to be so different. I think that adds to the narrative. And again, I do want to drum home this point in particular, because when people tune in on Saturday to RTE or to the games on Virgin Media, there'll be a lot of, what went wrong for Ireland? Why isn't it going right for Ireland? We clicked our fingers. Why isn't it fixed? Kind of a mantra. Well, if you step back from Ireland and their rebuild, there's so many different enticing storylines. And, like, sevens, and how some players will go off and have to play in their sevens competitions in Hong Kong in April, for instance. That's going to be a factor. England are in Twickenham that we mentioned. Scotland are rising, as are Wales. Italy are going to feel like they're neck and neck. France would probably feel like they never properly kicked on in the level that they should have in recent years. Because you think back to 2 years ago, they played England at home. They were in that game. Grand Slam decided they were in that game. Fell short in the last 20, 30 minutes. There's so many wonderful storylines coming into this. I think that's important to drum home when, as I said, a lot of media coverage here in Ireland won't be as positive. So let's try and round off the week as positive as possible. And I think we've done a great job so far. I might need to bring you back down to earth a small bit because my next question is about getting into predictions and all that. And I'm going to start with Ireland separately. And I might just start with yourself, Chrissy, because expectations aren't that high, but it is a rebuild. They've got three home games that, as we said on this podcast, spoke to Maeve yesterday. They are excited. They are excited to chance. They can play in the RDS. They can play in Ravenhill, in Musgrave Park. Where do you think Ireland will finish? Do you think they will get that coveted win? Or do you think it'll be just, improvement by bonus points?
I think one win would be quite an achievement for them. And again, it's nothing to do with, I'm not to the doom and gloom. It's just there in that rebuild, and if they had proper investment a few years ago, they probably wouldn't be in this position. But I think, yeah, like one win would probably be best, but I do want to see them, put it up to teams, even if at the end it doesn't go your way, at least you can say, like, we put up a good fight, maybe you'll get a few losing bonus points. But realistically, like, that would be the best we can kind of aim for, I'd say.
It certainly feels that way. And Leslie, I might just come to you next because, again, you watched quite a bit of Celtic Challenge and the Wolfhounds were dominant. This is an entirely different kettle of fish. And maybe that's not a good thing. Maybe it is a good thing. I don't know. But do you think Ireland will get that win? Do you think they'll move up the table? Or do you think it will be a case of sixth place and taking learnings from game by game, in game performances?
Oh, yes, I do. I think you. Yeah, I could see, especially with some you having some players back. I think that experience will help. I hope it's not against Scotland. I can't take another Irish beating. But it would be great to see you get a win. I actually think maybe Italy could be your. Italy can be a little bit up and down. So, if you can, come out pretty strong against Italy, I think you could it takes them. So, yeah, I don't see why you couldn't get a win against, hopefully not Scotland.
I understand that. I do understand what it's like to have a bogey team. I understand you're an Edinburgh fan. Thankfully, Edinburgh has not been a bogey team of mine as a Munster fan, but I get it. And for the first time in my life, maybe I won't be rooting against Scotland in this particular tournament because you're good enough to come on and to speak to us. Aoife, I'll come to you. You'll be covering it. You'll be there. You understand probably better than the rest of us, from playing and from being there at more games, the importance of just getting some momentum, breathing life back into it. We mentioned it the other day. If you're to put a number on it, where do you think Ireland will finish? But as well as that, do you think we will see the improvements and the tangible improvements that not only were they not there last year, it was a step in the opposite direction?
Yeah, like I don't think we'd be massively climbing the table this year, unfortunately, as I think Chrissy and Leslie have said, like, this is a rebuild, this is starting from rock bottom and coming back up again, and we've got a new coaching ticket, players moving in and moving out, your sevens like only coming in for a kind of half tournament, should they kind of be there at all, or should we be giving other people positions instead of relying on them? So there's that whole argument. So I think this year, as much as we love to climb up and do well and win, I think just competitiveness, being back in the fray, not being hammered by 50, 60 points each match, I think is what's important. It's about taking that first step. And like, as I said, the wins will hopefully come eventually. And obviously, like that, say, beating Italy now this year would be an ideal scenario, because like that, it would be that boost of confidence, you know, because I think we played them fairly early on in the competition, I want to say, I
I think
think.
it's round four. It's the middle of the home games, I believe, in Cork.
So I think like that would be kind of a nice boost coming into kind of like the tail end of it kind of thing, you know. And then obviously I think if we've Scotland then afterwards, you know, like that could be the boost we need to maybe be competitive there. So I don't see them coming any higher than probably sixth or maybe fifth, but like I just can't see anyone being overly below them either. I think it's going to be all about them just finding their footing again and being a competitive team. I think it's most important.
And just on that, I know we're tight for time, but just what is a successful Six Nations for Ireland? And I understand I probably should ask this at the top of the show because it's a very basic question to ask. What is successful? Is it improve, get to WXV, show you're competitive at WXV2 level, and then next year, hopefully be at a standard that you can hold your own? Do you think that's what constitutes successful?
I think so. I think like this Six Nations was always going to be like a here or there for us. Like we're not going in to absolutely win everything. We knew that. Do you know what I mean? And we know it from past experiences. So this is like, as I said, we're starting from absolute. I don't want to say we're starting from scratch because obviously we have carried players over from the past couple of years. But this seems like a new era a little bit. I think has been kind of thrown around a small bit. You know, it just seems that like Scott is kind of clicking with them. There's kind of a really good vibe around camp. You know, the girls seem kind of positive coming into it. I think it's really good they've pulled last year kind of behind them and they're not resting on their laurels a good bit. And they are kind of like that, not being scared taking on France now this weekend, you know, really kind of coming out swinging and ready to take scraps and all that jazz, you know. So I think for them, genuinely, it's just putting in a performance that they can be proud of and like that, take it into WXV, hopefully do well with WXV. And then next year, I think, will be the one hopefully that we'd be actually competitive for. And then we can start looking forward to a World Cup then, you know. So hopefully, a World Cup anyway. I don't want to say things too soon. Hopefully, a World Cup because that would be nice, being it literally being in England, you know. So yeah, I just think it's just getting back into it for them is the most important thing, and showing the fans, I think mostly, you know, some might have drifted from last year after how poorly it went and how poorly the media portrayed all of it, you know. Like bringing the fans back in, building that support that they can take on to next year then.
Absolutely, and like I've mentioned this myself, like I watch as many games as I can. I probably watch about five rugby matches a week, which is not really healthy when you put it in a raw number like that. But like last year, by the time it got to the Scotland game, there was a sense of fatigue. And I think there was a sense of fatigue for so many people where it's like, as above all else, the fact that they're Ireland, the fact they're home or away or whatever, you just don't want to see a team get beat like that. You don't want to see them getting beat handsomely every week. The England game probably didn't go as bad as it could have, which was probably an upside, considering how it went in Welford Road a year prior. But like, it had got to that stage. So as you said, that's really important to get the supporter confidence, not even confidence, but just get the eyes back on them and a little bit of hope back in behind them. And as you said, then as and we will be framing it this way, I think it should be framed this way. Maybe by the time the World Cup comes around next year, they're more than a competent team who could maybe take, you know, a proper place finish as opposed to, you know, losing two pool games and so on and so forth and trickling down that way. But Leslie, I'll just come to you to start our tournament predictions. Firstly, I want you to let me know, how do you think Scotland are going to do in this one, if you were to put a number on it, and then moving into your who you think will go on to win it.
I would like Scotland to come third. And I think our first game is probably one of our most important games, I think. I think Wales are we're probably closest in, you know, progress, if you like, to Wales. I think it's a realistic expectation, and these girls have done, you know, really well since last Six Nations, as I say. You know, we won WXV2. Edinburgh went really well in Celtic Challenge. We've given more women contracts. I think we're up to 32 now. Women have contracts in Scotland. So all our players, apart, are playing on the Prem. There's no reason that we shouldn't be coming a hopefully third. I still think England will be the overall winner. I just can't see anyone getting that close. France would be obviously probably the closest, but I don't think even France will get there, unfortunately. I think it'll be a, let's say England will win and fight it out for the rest.
I think that's the sense. I think in England Grand Slam, you don't want to say it feels obvious, but they have won four Grand Slams in a row. Like
Yeah.
we were talking about Ireland trying to do winning 10 games in a row in the Six Nations, the last two seasons in the men's, to win 20 in a row, to have already won 20 in a row is just obscene. And you can only tip your hat to them, even if it is England, and it kind of goes against your will. But it's the red roses, and it actually isn't too bad when you listen to the likes of this Emily Scarrett's podcast, you realize they're actually really decent. But anyways, Aoife, I'll come to you. Talked about Ireland. We've talked about every team so far tonight, and it's great to get a perspective on everyone. If you're to call it, I assume England, I would guess, or if you want to take a stab at the table, how do you see it going?
Oh, like it's written for them already. It sounds awful and stuff, but they're just miles ahead. So it's going to be England, I'd say, to win it. Probably get a Grand Slam. I put France second, and then I think third and fourth will be that toss up between Scotland and Wales. I think it will all come down to when they play each other. So I'm going to think of who gets third and who gets fourth, kind of thing. And then give or take, as I said, I think it's going to be very much best of the rest. I think, the bottom half of the table, especially between Italy and Ireland, I think will be quite tight, hopefully anyway. But yeah, like England have it won for that go through Six Nations then at the same time, but as I said, can't hate it. They're really humble about it, I think, as well. That's one thing I kind of like about them, like as much as you look at England and you look at the likes of Ben Earl screaming when he gets like a scrum penalty or something. It's nice. They're like England are quietly like they know they're good, but then they're also really just normal about it. So that's the one England
Weird.
team I'll ever be. It'll be the one England team I'll ever be a fan of.
Yeah, it's unnerving, to be honest. Like even in football, or in soccer, I should say. Sorry for saying football. The men's team can't stand them, can't like them, too much money. The women's team, it all seems sound, and it's the exact same in the men's game, which I don't know. Like I still don't know how I feel about them. I still don't know how I feel about being disappointed that England lost the World Cup final in 2022. I keep thinking 21, but it was pushed out a year. Chrissy, I'll let you wrap things up for us. We've had predictions, we've had everything. Firstly, if you were to put a number on Ireland, where would that be? And if you were to put a table log, how do you see it going?
Okay, I'm going to be optimistic with Ireland and I'm going to give them fifth.
Nice.
I
Great way
feel
to
like
end the
we
show.
get
We
one.
can leave it at that if you want. If we want to leave it at that, we
When
can.
it comes to the winner, as much as it logically makes sense, every fiber of my being will not let me say England, so I'm going to go for France.
That might
Even if
get
they're a
us.
sound team, I just can't do it. It's just against my moral.
That might get us a few more subscribers. I think this might be the way to go anymore. Just who's the best team in the competition? Yeah, they're gonna lose. No, but listen, they could. We don't know. I believe that game is it is in France, so you never know. Like maybe the old adage of which French team will turn up will actually be the one that you want to see on that given day for the first time ever. But that's all we have time for. We've had our predictions. We're all hoping for an Irish rebuild starts with some sort of tangible progress. But we will wait and see. As I said, Ireland against France, that is live on RTÉ2 this weekend. The fixtures spread across RTÉ and Virgin Media across the stage of the tournament. If you want to check that out, if you want to check out, Aoife will be doing some work on it. Leslie will have plenty of wise opinions on it, and Chrissy as well over on your Instagram. Check them out. Brilliant stuff, as always. So thanks to Aoife, to Leslie, and to Chrissy for joining me tonight for a really enjoyable preview show. considering there'll be again, there'll be a lot of doom and gloom said. This was a lot of fun. This was really good to have. Thanks home to everyone for tuning in across the week. Great response to the two interviews and the State of the Nation show as well. So it's always good to see. If you do like what you see or hear, please do like, subscribe, leave a review. Reviews, comments can make the world of difference and help us get out there, especially when, you know, we have great contributors. I think this takes our tally to 31 contributors since the start of the Men's Six Nations. So that's, they say Munster fans live in an echo chamber. I don't think that's true for me anyways. So that's always good. Thanks to everyone for tuning in across the course of the weeks and months. You can tune into my Instagram to see, or my Twitter to see what I'll be doing over the coming weeks. But for now, and until next time, hopefully Ireland do better. Take it easy.
Sports Social Podcast Network.